On this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, we discuss Nurses Week and the role of nurses in the healthcare system and in ambulatory surgery centers. We outline the ASC quality reporting that is due on May 15th. We prepare for ASCA 2019 in Nashville, Tennessee, and we discuss board meetings in ambulatory surgery centers.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a bi-weekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. The ASC regulatory environment is increasingly challenging, but organizations that outsource the regulatory oversight to ambulatory healthcare strategies have an edge. AHS works with ASCs to oversee their quality improvement, risk management, emergency and infection control programs, run their meetings, develop education programs, and always be prepared for surveys. Welcome to episode 52 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for Sunday, May 5th, 2019. We're recording from our temporary studio in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS, and I'm here with John Gailey. John is one of the leading experts in all aspects of the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry, and he's the author and co-author of over 10 books about the ASC industry, including the Survey Guide for ASCs and the recently released Finance and Accounting for ASCs. John speaks frequently at both national and state ASC meetings on a wide variety of topics, and he is the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. So as you probably gathered from me mentioning the temporary studio in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, we are on vacation.
Really? If we're on vacation, why are we recording an episode? And why did we work for 2 hours this morning on a Sunday?
Because that way we can have a lot of vacations that are working vacations as well. So
we actually had a wonderful day. It's raining outside, so we decided this is a good time to get off the beach and record. So it's beautiful down here.
Really those of you that complain.
Don't know Myrtle Beach, we come here once a year, and it's just a wonderful setting to vacation. So
It's a lot of time spent by the pool and walking the beach.
So. That's right. And we also got to know a little bit about the healthcare system here, didn't we, Sue?
I know how to start off a vacation.
Yes. We weren't here more than 24 hours, and Sue needed to have an EKG done at the local hospital here, the Strand Hospital, which was absolutely incredible care.
They really were.
Speaking as an outsider, but I was just very impressed with the wonderful care down here in South Carolina, and they made it pretty easy for you to get in and out. And I mean, we probably should jump to the end. You're okay.
Yeah. Heart palpitations and, you know, that kind of thing. If we had been home, but we'd been in New York City, then we'd come here. And, you know, I thought, oh, I'll just call my doctor and see what they say. And, of course, they said, go to the ER.
Should have known
I really don't want to. But we went. And like you said, they got us right in. I mean, I was in there, had the EKG, had an x-ray, had everything. Labs done super quick. And I guess they get very busy, and they just were very efficient, but very good. So it was
not so sure about that deductible, though.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a shock. We're not used to using emergency rooms.
$500 deductible. And I guess that's a good way to discourage it.
Yeah, right.
Like I said, if I'd been heading home anytime soon, I would have gone there. But
well, it's good to know. And the place is really right down the street from where we are.
Yeah, so. And it was worth it for the peace of mind.
Yeah. So we have a busy week ahead of us. Well, I mean, this week we're going to be on vacation. We will record another episode probably before the weekend or on the weekend, before we head off to ASCA, which is
a busy month.
Yes, absolutely. So we're going to spend some time during this podcast talking about ASCA 2019 and the preparation for it. After we do ASCA 2019, we also go off to New Jersey for their meeting on May 28th and 29th.
Yep.
So I did want to have a quick little conversation about the state of the podcast. We are over 7,000 downloads so far, 52 episodes, of course, done. Mm-hmm. And we've been recording for about, I think we're about 16 months now. And okay, just for everybody's edification, if you're ever telling your friends where we are, here's an interesting list. We are on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, TuneIn, Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher, Blueberry, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and of course our own website at ascpodcast.com.
So you can't escape us.
You can't escape us. The only thing we're not on yet is iHeartRadio, which is we are pending with them. So we're working to try to get that taken care of. So I know sometimes when you tell your friends about how to find us, you know, they're familiar with one product over another one. So that I thought I would just list that. And yet again, we find ourselves recording not only on our vacation, but on a Sunday before Game of Thrones. So,
yes. Well, we really don't have to get all that prepared for it, but we are excited about it. And there was a lot of discussion generated by the last one. So
I know
not everybody watches it, so we won't go into it. But
No spoilers. Yes, but yeah, definitely. Yes. I found
quite interesting.
It was actually one of those things that we seem to bond quite well with a number of our clients about what's going on with Game of Thrones. So, yep.
But more importantly, what is this week coming up?
This week.
I hope you know.
Is it anything about dolphins? Oh, nurses. That's right. Yes.
It is Nurses Week coming up. And for people who don't know, nurses are the most trusted professionals. The Gallup polls that they've done for 17 years straight, nurses have come up on top.
As the most trusted professionals.
Most trusted, yep. And I think
which is kind of sad, actually. I mean, it's great that you are the most trusted
it's
profession,
not sad.
But no, when you think about all the other professions out there.
And I think it comes from our being patient advocates, which I think we're going to chat a little bit more about.
Yeah.
I was looking on the World Health Organization website, and I think these statistics are from actually 2016, but there were 29 million nurses and midwives worldwide, including 3.9 million in the U.S., and they are expecting to need more than a million more nurses by 2020. And they had some ideas of, you know, some of the issues that affect nurses and keeps those shortages going, which I think a lot of nurses would agree with, the staffing ratios, burnout, aging population is going to increase the need for nurses, and the aging workforce is also, you know, going to open up more.
And we know right now that nursing positions, nurse managers in particular, we just can't find them. We have many places right now. We literally are taking people that have very little experience, even management experience, and having to promote them into nursing management because it is so difficult to find experienced nurse managers out there. So
really
kudos to all of you experienced nurse managers. Thank you for the wonderful job that you do. And for anybody aspiring into nurse management, recognize it as an incredible career path right now and a lot of need, a lot of demand.
Yeah. There'll never be a problem being a nurse and trying to find a job. Really importantly, nursing shortages really affect patient care. They've been found to cause an increase in errors, morbidity, and mortality rates. So we're really needed out there. And I kind of looked back on some Florence Nightingale information. She was really very impressive and really elevated the profession. And so when I was looking at the history of nursing, they talked about some accounts from the Middle Ages where care of patients often fell to uneducated, elderly, or people even that were ill themselves that really couldn't do anything else. And they didn't know anything about infection, of course. They were often sharing beds and, you know, they talked about someone with TB or polio, measles, whatever could be tucked right in bed next to someone with a broken arm or an open wound. You know, it was a whole different thing than it is now. And that's such an important thing that now our role has really become to be a patient advocate.
Right. And that, in my view, that's probably something that cannot be emphasized enough is we find, especially in our industry, the importance of the role being differentiated from the role of the physician. Mm-hmm. You're not the doctor's assistant. You're there to advocate for the patient. You're there to be the person that is constantly watching out for the best interests of the patient. The doctor is there to do his role, which is extremely important, to cure the disease or the fix whatever health problem that is there. But you as a nurse and all of the nurses that work in our centers, you have a very important role that you should never forget.
Yeah, you're part of that team. You're not an assistant to anybody else. And, you know, it works best when everybody really understands their roles. And there's really nobody that does what nurses do in that way of being just always, always advocating for the patient, doing what's best for the patient, whether it means you have to question the doctor or...
Right. Well, and I think that's what's important in those discussions that we have, or when we hear, it happens a lot with us. We get questions from people saying, well, can I have a nursing assistant, or can I have a medical assistant do this? Can I have the post-operative phone calls be made by a medical assistant after the procedure is done? And you have to constantly remind people of the importance of that nursing role there, that nurse has that relationship with the patient, and her or his job is to, you know, advocate for them both, you know, before, during, and after the procedure is done.
And remembering that nurses have been trained in that whole overview of assessment and teaching, and those are valuable skills. They're, they're things that...
With a big emphasis on that teaching role, too, the teaching to the patient.
Yes. And then, as I said, the other part of that, when Florence Nightingale began caring for soldiers in the Crimean War, she noted that almost half were dying from diseases rather than injuries. So she campaigned to focus on cleaning the hospital area and, you know, opening up the windows, getting fresh air and sunlight in there. It reminds me of a mom, kind of like, open those blinds, get some sun in there. But the fresh air obviously could have done some good, get rid of some of that.
Which I'd like to do right now so we can get some ocean air in here, unfortunately.
It would be a little too windy. I think it would make a lot of noise. But, you know, and of course she didn't know anything about the bacteria. She thought it was just dirt in general was causing the problems and didn't have that understanding that we have today of the role of microbes in infection. But, you know, she was on the right track, and it made a huge difference in the mortality rates. And I think that's interesting because so many nurses now...
Here we are, circle back, and now it's infection control is a big issue.
You know, it's just such a nursing role, and I think it's how it started back there.
Right.
And we always encourage nurses now to, you know, to get that training, to get the certification that we talk about.
Right. And to continuously educate the patient.
Yeah.
And be, again, be the advocate during the procedure of ensuring that infection control procedures are followed throughout the entire procedure that's being provided, well, all aspects of the care that we provide.
And again, I don't ever want to sound like we're slamming doctors, but they've got their training and their focus.
Right.
And I think sometimes nurses see things from a different perspective and can keep them on the right track with the...
Right.
You know, all of those things we have to do to keep things sterile and or clean, depending on the procedure. And lastly, in 1872, the first permanent school of nursing was established in Philadelphia, and it was following the Nightingale model. So that's kind of how things started. Now, the World Health Organization has announced that 2020 will be the year of the nurse and midwife to honor the 200th birthday of Florence Nightingale.
In 2020 is her 200th birthday. Wow.
Yep. So they'll be launching the first State of the World's Nursing Report. Nurses and midwives account for nearly 50% of the global health workforce. And of course, a lot of those are women.
Right.
A lot of our male nurses, so nothing against that. But it's a good way, especially in some developing countries, other countries where women don't have as many opportunities. That's a
We have a lot of male nurses, though, in the profession now. We see a lot of them in our surgery centers. So we have to be careful not to always use the term she.
I know. Yeah. No, that's definitely. When I was in the hospital, for some reason, especially the male nurses, the patients would ask, why didn't you just become a doctor? But it's a whole different way. It's not a step below a doctor. It's a whole, which I know probably I'm preaching to the choir, but it's just.
Well, I still tell the story of Jenna, my daughter, you know, a nurse. She's been on this podcast. Actually, you'll hear her in a in a few minutes, a little skit coming up. But, you know, Jenna, I remember when she was in high school, she did an internship at the surgery center that I was running at the time. And she had dreams, and she certainly could have become a doctor.
Yeah.
She had dreams of becoming a doctor. Kind of interested in the anesthesia profession at that point. And after spending a summer working at the surgery center in Rochester, she decided she wanted to become a nurse. And that has been her passion. It had been a single focus all of her life. And she is there now, of course, and never looked back. And yet, as I said, she could have gone either way, certainly with her brains and her attitude.
Yeah.
But she's made a fantastic nurse, as we all know here.
Yeah.
So, any benefits of Nurses Week here? Anything going on?
I was looking into some benefits, freebies that we nurses can
Because I was too cheap to actually do anything for
I thought I've got to go out and find it myself.
I'll figure something out. Of course, I'm on vacation. That'll be my excuse for not doing anything for Nurses Week.
But. Well, but as a nurse, I said, well, I'll take a week in Myrtle Beach.
There you go.
Look, I got it. So I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, the rest of the nurses in our company are heading down here. Sorry about that.
So AORN is offering some discounts for membership. So if that's something you've been considering, this could be a good week to do it.
We probably should really put a pitch in for AORN here, the Association of Operating Room Nurses, a great organization.
Yep.
There's a lot of good information. The books that they publish, of course, are the primary books in the industry about that. So somebody in your organization should be a member of AORN and encourage people to be members.
Yeah, lots of tools you can find when you're a member and lots of good resources.
And what better time to do it than when there's a discount?
So Amazon is offering some free Kindle books for Nurses Week. And one of those that I was interested in is Diary of a Nurse on the Western Front, 1914 to 1915. And it is an actual diary from a nurse that was caring for the soldiers back then. And it just sounded like it might be an interesting one. And Notes on Nursing by Florence Nightingale. And again, just the Kindle editions. And there was quite a few other ones as I was looking through. They're not textbooks or anything like that, but there was a few that looked pretty interesting. So it's worth checking out.
Well, thank you, Amazon.
Yes. And Cinnabon, I believe, is giving out a free cinnamon bun.
During the whole week?
I think so.
Does that mean that I have to drive you to a Cinnabon? We're up to any down here.
And some uniform stores. A lot of what I found was more local stuff, so I really don't want to just give names and things. But, you know, anything that you're doing, you know, check it out. If there's a place you go to, normally ask about it. I know some places actually all year round will give discounts, I think. So always remember to ask about that.
And for the owners and for the administrators and surgery centers, make sure you do something nice for your nurses there to recognize the incredible role that they have in the organization. So let's talk about news in the industry. And probably the most important thing going on right now, other than ASCA 2019, is a reminder about Medicare quality reporting. So the deadline is May 15, 2019 for submitting the web-based measures for the year 2018 by the deadline. And this needs to be done on the qualitynet.org website.
One note we'd like to make is that centers that have fewer than 240 Medicare claims, which includes Medicare primary and Medicare secondary claims, are not required to participate in the program for the subsequent reporting period. So if you didn't have 240 Medicare claims in 2017, you would not be required to report in 2019 for the 2018 data. But make sure you're always checking back.
Right.
Because this can change year to year, of course.
For the 2018 reports that are due by May 15th, facilities must report the following information on the QualityNet.org website. Now, we've talked about these many times on the podcast. Hopefully, everybody is already doing this. I hope I'm speaking to the choir, but let's just be very specific. So this year, we have to report 2018 data on ASC9, which is endoscopy and polyp surveillance, appropriate follow-up intervals for normal colonoscopies in average-risk patients, and ASC10, which is endoscopy, polyp surveillance, colonoscopy interval for patients with a history of polyps and avoidance of inappropriate use. ASC 9 and 10 are what we refer to as web-based measures, meaning that they are not reported through claims such as is reported with ASC 1 through ASC 4. Reporting of these measures is done on the QualityNet.org website, as I've said many times. You must sign up for this website to access the reporting, and signing up takes some time, so make sure you do it right away. The data for ASC 9 and 10 must be reported by all Medicare-certified ASCs, even if you don't do any gastroenterology procedures. So you could be a single specialty eye surgery center, and you still have to indicate that you didn't do any of these. Right, just put a zero, both for the numerator and the denominator, on the online form.
And in addition to ASC 9 and 10, facilities must also report ASC 13, which is normothermia, which is used to assess the percentage of patients having surgical procedures under general or neuroaxial anesthesia of 60 minutes or more in duration who are normothermic within 15 minutes of arrival in the PACU.
So regular listeners of this podcast know that you should have been collecting this data for the measure starting in January 2018. And note that this is a measure that uses data sampling. So you don't report in every single case, but you do samples throughout the year.
And finally, ASC 14, unplanned anterior vitrectomy, is used to assess the percentage of cataract surgery patients who have an unplanned anterior vitrectomy. Well, you should have been collecting this type of data as part of your QA program prior to the implementation of this measure. Data collection for Medicare quality reporting began in January 2018. This is not a sampling measure. You will report the actual numbers.
I did want to make a side note about this because we're running into some problems with some physicians that an unplanned anterior vitrectomy is anytime you do a cataract procedure and you end up having to do a vitrectomy. Yeah. While this is a known complication, it is certainly not something that is expected with each case. And you can't simply say that you plan on doing a vitrectomy for every case to avoid reporting this, which, by the way, has been attempted by some ophthalmologists. So I'm very disappointed that they have taken that attitude. We've seen it in the literature, and it will not work. It really has to be reported. And by the way, this is good data. You know, we're very excited about getting this data, this information, because now we can, you know, can finally have a measure to look at so that we can use it as part of our benchmarking. So let's do it right, guys. And I'm sure all of our podcast listeners are doing it right, but just recognize that there are some people out there that are, I guess, trying to game the system, and that's just not right.
And as you said, it is a known complication. So you're not saying that you're not a good surgeon. You know, nothing like that. However,
they are going to happen.
If you say that this is what you plan going in, then you have to wonder.
Right, exactly.
So you don't want to say that.
Right. So let's talk about ASCA 2019.
All right. So it begins Wednesday, May 15th with the pre-meeting. And the official meeting starts on Thursday, May 16th and runs through Saturday, May 18th. I'm excited.
I know. And it's not too late to sign up for it. However, you can't do online registration. You have to do on-site registration at this point. So, you know, before you head out there, you better make sure you can get a hotel room. I did just check, Sue, a few minutes ago. There are rooms still available. Of course, we're recording this on Sunday, May 5th. Won't guarantee that when everybody gets the podcast on Monday that they'll all be there, but I know they are running low on rooms, but there are available. And it really is never too late. This is an important conference, and that's one of the reasons we want to really talk a little bit about what's going on there.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff. So one of the keynote speakers is Scott Hamilton. I used to love watching him when I went through a period where I really loved the ice skating, and he was one of my favorites. So I'll read a short bit of the write-up about him. It says, during this captivating keynote presentation, Scott will inspire you to reject average and go for the win in every part of your life, not for yourself, but to bring the greatest possible good to the world around us. So I think that's going to be really good.
Very inspiring, very nice. We always do something that's inspiring, too, to help bring people, give them something else to take away other than the technical skills.
And in that same vein is Alex Sheen, who is the CEO and founder of Because I Said I Would, which, again, kind of an inspirational thing. It sounds like he talks about being true to your word, you know, when you promise something, which we talk about a lot of times with patient care. Always under-promise and over-deliver. You know, never say you're going to do something or something's going to happen at this time or that time and not follow through. And that sounds like a great session as well.
So we have a lot of exciting sessions, more than we could ever talk about here, but we did want to point out some of the important ones that we really encourage people to attend. There's, of course, there's CMS quality reporting compliance, kind of talking about what we just talked about a few seconds ago. CMS emergency preparedness compliance, by the way, we had a speaker change at the last minute. I tried to help out, but I think we have two individuals that have stepped up to fill the shoes there, so that'll be taken care of. A how-to guide for infection control risk assessments, one of our big topics.
And I do want to mention that as I was grabbing these names of the sessions, I just was trying to get a good overview. There's lots more of them, and if I don't have one in there, I just wanted to apologize.
Yeah, of course, we're going to mention
couldn't put them all. Well, yes.
Yeah.
All three of yours. They have to rate in there. Boosting physician engagement is another one. Sterilization and reprocessing of ophthalmic instruments. A community approach to combating the opioid crisis. Right. So you'll begin to notice that there's infection prevention sessions, opioid sessions, and lots of advanced sessions, as well as it covers just a whole lot of different areas.
Right.
Today's rules on informed consent, that sounds like an interesting one too. Bullying, the silent virus, I assume just talking about making a good atmosphere at work.
And by the way, last year I attended one of those sessions on a similar topic, and that, boy, did that generate a lot of conversation during the session. Yeah. So I'm anxious to see that one too.
Due diligence and coding and revenue cycle assessments, is it a necessity or waste? And Leadership 301, take your ASC to the next level with the 4 R's. Preventing pharmacy problems, medication shortages, opioids, diversion, disposal, and antibiotic stewardship.
Then managing an ASC renovation and expansion project, ocean safety and infection control for ASCs, and simple steps for enhancing your team's productivity.
And of course, John Gailey, pre-conference CASC review course,
which is an excellent introduction for. So the CASC review course is meant to give you an overview in preparation for the CASC exam. But I'll tell you, we send a lot of our administrators to that course also. And I'm not the only speaker there, by the way, just a full disclosure. I do one of the four sections. Okay. But the CASC review course is a great overview for anybody that's new to the ASC industry in a management role. And I really encourage you to consider it.
Finance 201 is the other one.
Like that's about advanced finance issues. I'm going to have some fun with that, I hope, this year.
Because there are a 101?
Yeah, there is. They're on different days, I believe, right now. And the 101 is meant for people that, you know, kind of new to ASC finance, nurses in particular. But Finance 201, I still think that a lot of nurses, even those that don't have a lot of experience, after they've gone through 101, they should be able to go to 201. Yeah.
And you always make yourself available for questions afterwards. And then the last one is Ownership Structure and Organizational Governance.
Which is a new speech for me here. I do speak about it at state conferences, but this will be a great discussion of governance, which everybody should know by now is one of my passions in the ASC industry. So other news going on, again, about ASCA, a lot of things going on in ASCA, is the 2019 Salaries and Benefits Survey data collection is open. The deadline to participate is May 31st. So participation is open to all ambulatory surgery centers, and there is no cost to participate. So the purpose of the Salaries and Benefits Survey is to gather information from surgery centers across the country on the current state of the salaries and benefit structures in your organization. You complete everything online, and to participate, you go to www.ascassociation.org, and under the Resource Center tab, select Salaries and Benefits Survey. If you don't participate, you can still purchase the results when they are available or when they're published in July. And again, if you don't participate, the cost is $299 for ASCA members and $399 for non-members to get a copy of this survey.
ASCA members and non-members who complete at least 40% of the survey will receive their personalized results for free. So gives you a good incentive to do that.
That's right. And ASCA's Salary and Benefits Survey allows ASCs to compare their compensation packages to similar ASCs, negotiate a raise, or determine salary and benefits for a new position. ASCs can benchmark their information with other ASCs from the same region, with a similar number of employees of the same specialty, with a similar number of patient encounters, and more. So it's a very robust system. It's all done online. You'll use the online platform, the same one that you use in order to enter the data, to review the data, which provides personalized graphical reports and countless options for data comparison to create the most meaningful reports possible.
And those come out in July, correct?
Correct. And note that this year they're asking more questions about the infection preventionist position. You might remember when they implemented the CAS credential, they added additional questions there to be able to assess the value of that credential. They're doing the same thing with CAPE now, too. This is a great tool for determining how your salaries and benefits match up with others nationally and in your region. I'll tell you, I assume many of our clients use the survey to show owners when and why the organization might have a problem recruiting. So it gives them really empirical data to be able to go back to them and say, listen, our salaries are too low or our benefits are not meeting the needs of our organization or isn't the standard in the area. So that's it for this section. Let's take a short break, and we're going to come back with a fun section on board meetings.
One of your sessions at ASCA 2019 will be on governance. It's titled Ownership Structure and Organizational Governance. We thought we would prepare everyone for that session by talking about governing body meetings.
So back in January 2018, we did a skit. We brought a bunch of our employees from Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies together. It's in episode 2, and I thought I'd replay it. I love this skit. Jenna, who plays the part of the administrator here, just it's an incredible role for her, and it's so much her personality, too. And, of course, the rest of us in the company played the doctors on the board there. I do. We need to point out here is that we're not meaning to put down doctors.
Not at all.
It's just our kind of bad attempt at humor, I guess.
Yeah. And we can't make fun of nurses.
No,
it's not
at all.
Allowed in a household with two
and this
nurses.
Episode certainly does not. But it does show the wrong way to do a board meeting. And I think that, you can learn a lot just from that.
Yeah.
And we're certainly not implying that this is the way most board meetings go. But let's listen to the skit from January 2018 about board meetings. And remember, this is not what we recommend your board meetings look like. So.
Okay, everyone. This is our fourth quarter 2017 board meeting. Emphasis on board. Can we get on with this? This has been a long day.
Sorry, Doctor. I was just making copies of some of the things we need to address today.
Well, don't bring up too many problems. These meetings take too long as it is.
But Doctor, the purpose of these meetings is to be sure that the center is moving in the right direction.
Well, we're making money, aren't we? Then we're going in the right direction.
Greg, is the meeting over?
Come on, Docs. Some of the things on the agenda today are really important.
Okay, let's just get on with it.
Okay, all in favor of forgoing the reading of the minutes from last month and accepting the minutes as written?
We had a meeting last month?
I don't remember that.
Did we approve a disbursement last month?
Oh, yeah, that was... I remember that.
Please, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, moving on. Dr. Kildare, would you like to give the president's report?
Huh?
The president's report. It's where you tell the board how the center is doing, how things are going, and how we are financially.
Well, we'd be doing a whole lot better if we didn't spend too much time and money on stupid things.
What are you talking about?
I see people changing gloves way too often. We're going to go through surgical scrub like water, and I keep seeing the nurses replacing sharps containers that still have plenty of room in them.
You're joking, right?
He's not. I mean, really, why can't the surge techs wear scrubs a few days in a row?
Or better yet, do we really need surgical techs? I mean, we pay these nurses enough to do work a little harder.
Okay, all of you just stop. Try to be realistic. There is a fine line between making money and making a mess.
Do you really think we're made of money?
Okay, moving on again. We have a survey coming up.
Don't even start with the idea of hiring a consultant again. I'm not paying for that.
But we need help, Dr. Kildare. We will not even pass the survey with our current equipment, current staff, or our lack of good documentation.
What's the matter with our equipment?
We spend a lot of money on things we have.
But we've been told that the C-arm will not survive its next preventative maintenance.
Doesn't need maintenance. That duct tape is holding up fine.
I give up.
So I just love that skit. I had a lot of fun doing it with the employees there. And again, it is not the way, certainly it's not the way our board meetings go with our clients. But if you're not careful, I guess it could happen. And, you know, many times when I do surveys, I find the problem is that when I read the minutes really focus on things that are financial in nature, mm-hmm. as is what happened in this particular meeting. Yeah. So I thought I'd bring that back. And I do want to thank the Ambulatory Healthcare Strategy employees that did this in January of 2018. Alex Borneman, Judy D'Ambrosio, Jenna Alvarez, and of course myself. So, Sue, let's talk about board meetings.
CMS only requires at least one board meeting a year, but that's just really not advisable to do it that way.
No. I mean, and no surveyor is going to look at the one meeting a year and feel that you really have mm-hmm. demonstrated an ongoing commitment to the organization. Yeah. I mean, we, as part of the conditions for coverage, as part of the accreditation requirements, you need to show that the governing body is very active in the activities of the surgery mm-hmm. center.
Well, there's just so many things that the board should be involved in.
Right.
So many different issues that really require you to have more frequent meetings.
Right. Approval of privileges of the practitioners is probably mm-hmm. the biggest mm-hmm. thing. I mean, if you've got an organization where there's one practitioner and one anesthesiologist, yeah, that's another
changes.
Matter. Yeah. But there's going to be people that are being privileged throughout the year, and you're mm-hmm. going to have a board meeting in order to prove that.
And that oversight of the quality improvement function is so important.
Right. So let's talk about that for a second, because one of the things that people don't always remember is that the whole purpose of the quality improvement program is to improve the quality of care at the organization. So you analyze various things.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about this a lot. You analyze incident reports, you analyze chart reviews, et cetera. But out of that, sometimes things are going to come out, like mm-hmm. maybe policy changes, or maybe you're going to have to re-educate the employees, or maybe you're going to have a conversation with the doctors. Mm-hmm. And all of those actions are going to require some type of activity that gets ultimately to the governing body, especially when you're dealing with a policy change. So inevitably, part of the role of the governing body is to review the activities of the Quality Improvement Program and act on whatever changes were recommended by that body. And if you have a medical executive committee, the same thing there. The medical executive committee is responsible mm-hmm. for the medical staff. They have to approve the policies and procedures mm-hmm. in the clinical area, and they're the ones that make the recommendation to the governing body as to who would be admitted as for privileges at the organization.
Yeah, but there has to be ongoing peer review of providers, which is a big thing right now.
Absolutely. And that is definitely something that has to be reported directly to the board. And, of course, is something that is made part of the decision-making process for credentialing and privileging providers. So this is, as you said, it's a very hot topic right now. And I think we really do need to have an episode about that in particular. We'll start working on that because we've had a lot of discussions in our company within the last probably 2 to 3 weeks. With some of our clients that have had some real challenges in trying to get the doctors to participate in this peer review, and in one case we have a center, we really started up the peer review activities here, and the doctors felt, you know, that somebody was watching over their shoulders all the time. And that wasn't the intention at all.
Yeah, or taking them away from patient care, but it really is a critical part of that patient care.
Exactly. So when we're talking about governing body meetings, not only is it regulatory in nature, not only is the activities there have to do with the regulatory nature of the organization, but also the legal side. You know, you want to make sure that if you're ever sued, you have documentation to prove that the governing body is active here, that they took actions, they approved the policy manual, they hired and gave authority to various employees to perform the functions that they have. So it is extremely important that you have regular governing body meetings. I recommend quarterly, certainly no less than that. And surveyors doing surveys and lawyers doing court cases can't see the activities of the governing body, as I say this a lot. So they want to see how the governing body is carrying out the duties and the responsibilities that they have. They have to look at something else, and that is, of course, the minutes. And that is why the minutes of the governing body are so important. They document the activities and prove that the governing body is involved.
Yeah, so we've established why they're so important. Why don't we talk about what should be included in those minutes?
So as you know, Sue, because you write a lot of them, the minutes are not short, aren't they?
No.
You know, when we do them, they are quite lengthy and include a lot of exhibits and attachments. And you know, we're very careful to make sure that they meet the legal requirements. But they provide an overview of the activities of medical staff, including credentialing and recredentialing, policy recommendations, any actions related to the medical staff, an overview of the quality improvement meetings, including the results of activities that resulted in a policy change that has to be approved by the board, as well as any changes in employment or education of the employees. Discussion of financial issues. But don't make this the only thing in the minutes. This is one hint that I always give to people that are writing these minutes. Even if the governing body did spend 90% of the time talking about financial things, make sure the minutes don't reflect that that's the only thing that was done in there. Yeah. And you know, we just came from a board meeting this last week where there were quite a number of financial issues that came up.
Yeah.
But we still got all of the regulatory stuff in on time. The minutes will reflect them about an even amount because the financial conversation just kind of, well, actually got a little bit out of hand.
But they've certainly paid attention to the other things.
And that has been discussed. Absolutely. Yep. So don't let your meeting minutes, even if the 90% of the meeting was about finance, make sure that the meeting minutes properly reflect the entire role that that the governing body has. Don't forget to include a discussion of legal issues. That is a requirement. And delegation of duties of staff, including the appointments of various individuals.
Such as the medical director, the administrator, nurse manager, infection control coordinator, the pharmacy director, radiology director, if that's applicable to your center, risk manager, privacy officer, and there can be many more.
That's right. So, you know, look at your policies and procedures and make sure that the governing body is delegating on a regular basis to those individuals. Mention the names. Anytime there's a change in that position, make sure the governing body appoints that new individual. Now, the rules don't necessarily require you to have these appointments on an annual basis. We highly recommend it because it's rare that we can remember. You know, if you've had an administrator working for you for 20 years, how are you going to remember which board meeting they were appointed at?
Yeah, it just makes it much more clear. And there's also required annual reporting and oversight, such as your QAPI program, risk management, infection control, and emergency preparedness.
So I guess the next question that is asked of me is, how can we make the meetings more useful? Yep. You know, certainly in the skit that we just heard, the governing body members were not really engaged. And it's not for the efforts of the administrator there, but it's a tough thing. So one of the things I try to tell people is make sure that you're not holding a meeting where the administrator is doing all the talking. Yeah. Make sure that everybody understands that the purpose of the meeting is to have a discussion about pertinent things that are going on, be involved, and that
This is the time to make decisions. So get out of the way first, all of the things that you have to report to the governing body or present it to them before the meeting and in documentation, you know, prior to the board meeting. And that way during the meeting, if they have to make decisions about how they're going to, you know, what policy changes need to be done, whether any actions have to be taken against medical staff that might not have met the requirements, anything that has to be done, make sure that that is a decision-making process that's well, there's plenty of time to do that in the governing body meeting, and that'll keep people engaged.
Rather than just listening to somebody talk, they're going to tune out.
That's right. And realistically, the board president should run the meetings, but I'll tell you, in the real world, most of the time it's the administrator. You know, many of our centers, of course, we run these meetings, and not that we're all we're doing is trying to expedite it to make sure the meeting goes according to plan and everybody keeps on topic. And sometimes having an outside individual such as ourselves run those meetings becomes very efficient because it keeps things on target.
Yeah.
So in summary, governing body meetings, of course, are very important. It's important to have them as frequently as you need them, at least quarterly. Do you need to document those meetings with appropriate minutes that reflect the activities of the governing body and that those minutes reflect the responsibilities as outlined in the conditions for coverage, any state regulations, et cetera, and of course, accreditation requirements. And a good and functional governing body is absolutely critical for the efficient and appropriate operation of the facility.
Yeah.
So let's take a short break and then discuss some upcoming activities in the ASC industry.
John, ambulatory healthcare strategies is really growing fast. We've been adding employees steadily over the past 12 months. Can you tell the listeners what's been happening?
So clearly, this podcast has been very popular, thanks, of course, to you and me, because of our wonderful work here and our infectious, I don't know if I should be using infectious personalities in a podcast here about infection control and various items, but definitely we're enjoying doing this, and certainly the word is getting out about the great things that we're doing at AHS. So recently, we added infection prevention consulting to our services and mentoring of infection control preventionists in the organizations, and that's being headed up by Lori Rodericks, who is our newly certified CAIP individual. So she has the Certified Ambulatory Infection Preventionist certification now, and she's always been doing infection control for us, but now she's got this new title. So she can do ongoing infection control consulting, particularly if you don't have a qualified IC person on staff. She can help you in following up on infection control issues. She can do mentoring of infection control staff. And she can do infection control and sterile processing competencies. And we've also enhanced our life safety services by adding Jim Masters to our staff. He is a life safety surveyor, and so he joins Alex Borneman, who is our director of operations, to be able to do various life safety surveys and consulting on life safety issues, as well as probably the most important thing is follow up on life safety citations. That's a very difficult area for many organizations to be able to deal with, you know, what happens when you get a life safety citation, how do you deal with that? So we now have that ability. And of course, our unique retainer-based regulatory services, where we help keep you on top of all the ASC regulatory requirements and always make sure that you are survey ready. So let's talk about some upcoming events in the ASC industry.
Every episode, we will inform you of upcoming events. If you would like your event to be included in the podcast, please send the event information to info@ascpodcast.com. Also, want to remind you that the ASC Podcast with John Gailey is available to support your ASC association. John is available to speak, and the podcast can record a podcast from your meeting.
So registration is open for ASCA's 2019 National Advocacy Day, September 24th in Washington, D.C.
ASCA 2019 will be at the Gaylord Opryland Resort and Convention Center in Nashville, Tennessee, May 15th through the 18th, 2019. We were trying to tell somebody where it was being held the other day.
Yeah.
And we could not think of the exact name of the hotel, and I thought, we have said this 1,000 times.
I know.
But we're very, as you know, we're excited to be there, and we've told you a lot about it.
Right. And we're coming down on a Tuesday night. I think all of our employees are coming down Tuesday night. Our evenings are quite full, but please try to say hi to us during the conference if you have questions. We'll be carrying around our podcasting equipment. So, you know, I'm not going to whip one out and just to have somebody talk into the microphone, but we
would. Might.
That's right. And we'll be recording a couple sessions there. I don't know how live I can get those up. It all depends upon how quickly you can edit and I can upload. Assuming I work together to do all of the background stuff here. We have no engineers. We are the engineers for this podcast. So, but we'll do what we can, and certainly at least one podcast and probably two for the episode. The New Jersey State Association's 9th Annual ASC Conference is May 28th through May 29th at the Hilton East Brunswick, Three Tower Center Boulevard in East Brunswick, New Jersey. So it's just after ASCA 2019, and I will be the keynote speaker, and podcast will be recording from there. For more information, make sure you visit the New Jersey State Association website.
The New York State Association of Ambulatory Surgery Centers Spring Conference is June 5th and 6th in Saratoga Springs. For more information, visit the website at www.nysaasc.org.
There's a lot of good content, especially since I was largely involved in making sure that that content is excellent. So please make sure you sign up if you're from New York State or even the neighboring states.
Yep. And we'll be there.
And the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology, better known as APIC, their 46th annual conference is June 12th through the 14th, 2019, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
And the Tennessee ASC Association's membership meeting is June 19th, 2019, at AmSurg, Nashville, Tennessee.
The Gulf States ASC Conference is June 19th, 2019, through June 21st, 2019, at the Ritz-Carlton in New Orleans.
The Arizona Ambulatory Surgery Center Association's annual conference is June 27th through 28th, 2019, at the Camelback Inn and Spa in Scottsdale, Arizona.
And the California Ambulatory Surgery Association is September 4th through the 6th, 2019, in Monterey Bay, California. For more information, make sure you visit www.casurgery.org, and we will be there. We've actually already got our tickets.
That was really good last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I won't be speaking at the conference, but we will. I believe we're going to be recording from down there, and we'll certainly keep everybody up to date on what's going on. So that's it for this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. Join us again in, very shortly. I'm not sure we're going to drop the next couple episodes. It'll be more frequently than every 2 weeks, at least for the next couple episodes. Mm-hmm. Spread the word about our podcast with your friends and colleagues, and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors. First, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including the Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.